Last Monday was the 34th day of the new year. If you recall the front page of our morning newspaper, it featured a headline which read, "Six slain by guns." And the lead sentence which followed this headline read, "Six Clevelanders died of gun wounds over the weekend, bringing this year's total to 40. 40 murders in 34 days. 1974 was a year in which America was at peace. Yet during 1974, 20,000 Americans died of gunshot wounds. It is said that more civilians have died from guns just in this century, 75 years of this century, than our soldiers and sailors and Marines have died in all of our wars from enemy gunfire. Now, the answer to the carnage that guns produce would be federal legislation prohibiting the importation, manufacture, sales, and possession of guns. Guns could be held only by the duly authorized agencies of government, police, National Guard. But such legislation will not be on the books in the near future. There's little likelihood of its passage. If you want to know the mood of the nation as regards guns, I would remind you of the debate which was held in our city last fall, resulting finally by the passage by the Cleveland City Council of a very minimal gun registration law, which was then vetoed by the mayor. Americans are simply too caught up in the various gun myths that guns make the men, that guns protect our homes, that guns protect our freedoms, for Americans to be willing to pass the stringent anti-gun measures which are required. I'm sure you remember the great furor which followed the assassination of President Kennedy. Late November of 1963, we were promised by everyone in Congress that there would soon be stringent gun control rules. Senator Thomas Dodd of Connecticut was even then conducting gun control legislation hearings. Well, 1963 became 1964, and 1964 became 1965, and 1965 became 1966, and 1966 became 1967. And it wasn't until 1968, after 100,000 more Americans had died of gun-inflicted wounds, after Dr. Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy had been assassinated, before the Congress finally passed a 1968 Gun Controls Act, an act which in effect was not a gun control bit of legislation, but a piece of protectionist tariff legislation designed to protect the domestic gun industry. All that the 1968 Gun Control Bill did was to prohibit importation of guns from abroad, a piece of legislation dearly wanted by the domestic gun producers because guns from abroad were underselling their own products. That rule prohibited the sale by mail order of guns across state lines, a bill dearly sought by Sears Roebuck and the other gun stores to prevent the competition by those who didn't have high overheads, and a provision requiring the keeping of records as to sales and purchases by gun stores, a bit of legislation which proved totally ineffective because the stores were not told that they must prove the accuracy of the statements made to them. Time after time, enterprising reporters went into one gun store or another and bought firearms in the name of known felons and murderers. No one asked them questions about it. The carnage went on. In 1972, after 80,000 more Americans had died of gunshot wounds, after civil rights leader Medgar Evers had been assassinated in the South, Congress again dealt with the issue of gun control legislation. During the very hearings, one of their own, the venerable Senator Stennis of Mississippi, was shot by a holdup man in the Capitol. And the result? A bill was submitted by Senator Hart of Michigan, which would have prohibited all importation and manufacture and sales and possession of firearms. And the vote on this particular bit of legislation was 83-7 against. And Senator Edward Kennedy of Massachusetts, who had good reason to know the bloody cost of gun freedoms, introduced a less sweeping piece of legislation which would have prohibited the sale of concealed guns, which could be concealed, the small guns, the handguns, and which would have required the government to investigate all gun sales and to keep a record of them and to set conditions which purchasers of guns would have had to meet before they could own a gun. This particular bit of legislation was defeated by a roll call vote of 78 senators against and only 11 senators for. Now, I think we have to ask ourselves why there is this blindness to the very evident cost of gun freedoms, why this unwillingness to take effective gun control action. And the answers are many, and they are complex. They go to the very nature of our nation. In the first instance, the gun industry is a $2 billion industry, and it has a very effective and powerful lobby. The gun control manufacturers were once small companies, independent companies, but they are now part of the major corporations in the United States. Winchester Arms is owned by the DuPont Corporation. The Remington Rifle Company is owned by the Olin Matheson Corporation. And these corporations have powerful lobbies and make sizable campaign contributions. And they have used their power to sponsor the professional gun owners lobby, the National Rifle Association. And between the protectionist lobbies of the corporations and the so-called huntsman lobby of the NRA, Congress has found it inauspicious or imprudent to pass gun control regulations. But like prostitution, gun control legislation could not be prevented by business lobbies alone if ordinary citizens, many ordinary citizens, did not think it American, natural, right to own weapons. Americans somehow have identified Americanism and the right to bear arms, to own a gun. When we think of the heroes of the frontier or the revolution, they've always got a gun slung across their back. The great Daniel Boone type of hero was the man who was a sharpshooter who could kill an Indian with a long rifle at 100 yards. When we process our flag in public, we dignify it and show our respect by carrying with it an escort of guns. You may have seen just a few days ago the bemusement of a veterans group in Rhode Island. They were conducting a memorial service in one of the local cemeteries. And the Roman Catholic priest who was conducting the liturgy walked out of the cemetery when these veterans began to fire rifles in respect of the dead. They, and I suspect most Americans, simply do not understand those of us who look on guns not as a sign of respect, but as murderous and bloody tools, which ought to be handled only in a time of last resort, at a time of attack or desperation. Most Americans, I suspect, look upon guns as natural and normal as mother's apple pie. After all, most Americans were given their first cap pistol by a grandmother who took them out for a Saturday outing. And they received their first machine gun wrapped up under a Christmas tree. It was a toy, but it shot sparks. It was a gun. And father took the young man out as a sign of his emerging manhood with his first air rifle or BB gun. He taught him to shoot squirrels or rabbits. Somehow Americans have identified manliness, guns, Americanism, and guns. We somehow think we'll be unmanned or that our society will be weakened if we're not allowed to have guns. When the first gun control bill was passed in 1968, there were already more guns in the United States than there were people. Americans accept guns as natural. And one of the reasons that we have been unable to pass effective gun control legislation is that somehow we feel that something basic, something natural, something right will be taken from us if our guns are denied to us. In the subculture of the street, among the lower classes, having a gun is the sign of manliness. Again and again, when a prisoner, young prisoner, is brought in who has committed some crime at gunpoint, he'll say to the policeman who interrogates him, "But the gun made me feel 10 feet tall." Guns, according to this psychology, make the man. But in fact, what happens is not that guns make the man, but that guns give a terrified adolescent trying very hard to live in an adult world a sense of power, power which he generally lacks the ability to discipline or to control. One half of all of the crimes committed in the United States at gunpoint are committed by young people under the age of 19. Guns make adolescents seem like men. And the American gun myth gives us evidence of this process. Most of those frontier gunsmen who we've turned into larger-than-life heroes were pimply-faced adolescents who were paranoid or pathological, who killed to survive as a cornered animal will kill to survive. The gun myth has turned them into great heroes, even as the gun myth turns the hired goons, the murderous goons of the mafia, into loyal soldiers serving loyally in the army of a godfather, a wise and kindly godfather. Guns do not make the man, and we of the middle class recognize that. But we are burdened with two other assumptions about guns, which are used when the gun lobby appeals to us to make us frightened about voting for the total abolition of guns in our society. We are told that somehow guns protect our freedoms, and we are told that somehow guns protect our homes. And it's time, I think, that we analyze both of these assumptions. Americans have a healthy skepticism of authority. England once impressed our merchant seamen into the Royal Navy. The English were known to use their army and their police to break down the door of the colonists and to search their homes. Americans know that power corrupts. And deep down, I don't think Americans were so much shocked as saddened by the evidence of how the CIA and the FBI had been used by the Nixon administration in illegal searches and seizures. But you know, in the last 100 years, no American has stood at the door of his home and protected it from the police or from the FBI or from some other agency of the government misusing its powers at gunpoint. That's not the way. It's the courts that protect our homes. It's ultimately due process that protects our homes. When we need to have protection against the arbitrary intrusion of the Central Intelligence Agency into our activities, we know we can't do it at gunpoint, so we ask for investigative and legislative remedy. It is vigilance and the right of peaceful assembly, the right to elect officials who will see to it that these agencies are restrained. It is these things that protect our freedoms in a complex society, not a gun. Guns do not protect our rights. Indeed, those groups who insist on having guns in order to protect American rights are, by and large, those groups most eager to subvert the rights of the majority. On the left, groups like the Weathermen and the Symbionese Liberation Army. On the right, the Minutemen. On the right, the Ku Klux Klan and groups of this type. Guns will not protect our freedoms. Nor will guns in the hands of an armed civilian soldiery protect this nation. The John Birch Society, the National Rifle Association, other groups through the 50s and 60s had a great campaign designed to convince Americans that a gun in every home was the best way of keeping communism from these shores. In the days of intercontinental ballistic missiles, a gun in the home was somehow going to protect America from foreign enemies. That's not the way. Guns in our homes will not protect our homes from arbitrary invasion by those who are illicitly using force or by some enemy. A well-disciplined army may. Justice in our world would do better. Guns are certainly not the way. And what of the argument that guns protect our homes, the more popular argument among groups such as this? We are frightened by the rise of crime, particularly by the rise of violent crime. And somehow we feel that we are doing what we ought to do when we bring a gun into our home in order to protect it from the intrusion of a burglar or a robber. But in point of fact, we are endangering our home, not protecting them, by bringing in the gun. The studies have shown that when a man or woman, a homeowner, fires a weapon against a burglar in the protection of their home, to protect their home, they are 5 times more likely to strike their children or their spouse than they are likely to hit the burglar. You're endangering your own when you bring a gun into your home. Guns will never go off accidentally if there are no guns there to go off accidentally. Someone in a fit of depression will not suddenly reach for the gun in the drawer, the dresser drawer, if there's no gun there to be reached for. Those who are gun advocates make a great deal of the argument that guns don't kill, people do. Which is the specious half-truth that somebody has to pull the trigger in order for the gun to go off. And they raise the specter of a disarmed civilian population at the mercy of this criminal population. Point of fact, very few of the illegal entries into your homes are done by those carrying arms because the penalties are much more severe. In point of fact, professional criminals rarely carry arms in the execution of their crimes because they know that even if the household owner has a gun, by the time he finds his key and reaches the cabinet where he's put the gun way up there where the children will never reach it, and somehow fumbled in the cabinet and found the gun and loaded the gun and brought the gun down, he will have this homeowner trussed up and manacled and be about his business. The problem with guns in homes, in order to protect the homes, is that they're rarely used effectively in that protection. They're used quite lethally against members of one's own family. Most murders, most killings, are killings not of a criminal against a civilian, the object of his crime. They're killings within a family, killings between estranged lovers or among neighbors. If you look at the 6 murders that took place in Cleveland last weekend, they reflect this national pattern. In 2 of the cases, the murderer was a woman, a wife. The husband came home and threatened to beat her up. She'd been beaten up before. She wasn't about to take it again. And so she raced into the bedroom where the husband had placed a gun in order to protect the home from burglars, and she grabbed that gun and she killed her husband. In a 3rd case, a man was sitting in a bar, and he and the bartender and some other patrons got into a violent argument, and he felt bested and angry, and he lived only 2 doors away. So he left the bar, went home, got the gun that was there to protect his family, took the gun down the bar and began to blaze away. In a 4th case, a man had made the mistake of taking 2 girls out the same night. And as he was walking them home, they got into a violent argument over him, and he made the fatal mistake of trying to be the peacemaker. And both these lovely young ladies had guns in their pockets, books, in order to protect them, and so they somehow shot the peacemaker. In the 5th instance, some youngsters on the near west side got into a brawl on the street, 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds, and 15-year-olds. And one 15-year-old felt that there was a particular bully on the other side, and he got particularly angry, and so he went home and he got the gun his father had there to protect the home, and he came back and he killed the bully. In only 1 of the cases, only 1 of these 6 cases where a man was found shot in an alley in the back of the home, is there the suspicion of robbery? And it's only a suspicion. Certainly in 5 of these 6 cases, if there had been no gun in the home, there had been no shooting of a gun. These were not premeditated killings in that sense. Oh, there might have been a good fight. There may even have been some knife wounds. But fists kill far more rarely than do guns, and knives are not as efficient as guns. I'm not saying to you this is not a violent society and will not remain a violent society, nor am I suggesting to you that caution and prudence are not ways in which not methods we must cultivate in order to protect ourselves in our society. I'm simply saying to you that guns are not the way. Guns are deadly. The bullet travels quickly and it can't be recalled. The trigger can be pulled easily. Once it's pulled, the bullet flies out at its target. Why have we been so dilatory as a nation in passing gun control legislation? In part because of the lobby of the industry. In part because we're somehow told that our ability to shoot at a target or at some prey, huntsmen, marks us as men. In part because we have this misconception that having a gun will protect our freedoms. A misconception which for some of us goes back even to a misconception of the Constitution. Whenever I make the case I have made to you this morning, someone is bound to say to me, but the Second Amendment to the Bill of Rights is a specific amendment permitting me to bear arms, to own arms. It's nothing of the case and has never been so interpreted by the Supreme Court of these United States. The Second Amendment to the Constitution does not grant to the individual citizen the right to bear arms. It grants to the state the right to arm a militia in order to keep law and order in the state. It reads, a well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It is neither a constitutional necessity nor a matter of political prudence for Americans to bear arms. It is not protective of your homes or of mine for us to have guns in our homes. Why then do we continue to purchase 5 million guns a year? I suspect in largest part because most of the people who are killed are not like us. When during the years of prohibition, there were these gangland slayings, good people said good riddance. It's saving the electric chair some work. These are nothing but hoodlums. Let's sweep them off the streets, be rid of them. And now most of the killings are down there in the center city. All six of the killings last weekend were in the center city. 5 of the 6 killings were blacks. And if Americans are a little shy about saying good riddance today out loud, they're saying it in their hearts. Somehow the gun menace becomes a menace only when it menaces us. We become outraged only when one of ours, a President Kennedy, a Martin Luther King, a Sandra Stennis, only when one of ours is shot. Only then do the good people of the United States become exercised. And that concern is then quickly forgotten because the killings continue and the killings remain down there in Huff, near West Side, among those we never meet and with whom we never mingle. But you know, we can't go on expecting to escape scot-free from this escalation of armor in the United States. San Francisco, a month or two ago, you remember there were 8 or 9 random killings of people on street corners. There have been occasions more than once in Cleveland where a person stopping at a stoplight was simply shot by a person in another car. There are the pathological and there are the paranoid, and it's very easy to walk 10 minutes from any public building in Cleveland and to buy yourself a gun and the ammunition. And small groups who band together for whatever purpose in the United States are not only succeeding in getting a handgun, a Saturday night special, 22 rifle, but when if you recall the shootout with the Symbionese Liberation Army, if you recall some of the descriptions in the paper of the arms and armor owned by this gang of drug pushers or this group of Minutemen, recall that many of these armories included rifles, shotguns, submachine guns, grenades, even some anti-tank mortars. The criminal element in the United States, given the nature of the freedom about guns that exists all around us, is arming itself to the teeth with weapons of incredible power, military level power. So are some of the more irresponsible political groups of the extremes of the American political scene. And at some point, these guns will be used. And only when and if America is willing once and for all to pass federal gun legislation, which would totally prohibit the importation, manufacture, sales, or possession of guns. Will we stop this terrible, bloody carnage? And will we abort this escalation of firepower? Will we be more exposed to violence? The greatest fear, the bottom line for most Americans is the line, well, if I am disarmed, the criminal will remain armed. Perhaps so, for a while. But stiff penalties can be imposed, and you're not very safe now. And dear friends, there has been absolutely no correlation between the escalation of arms among American civilians of the middle class and a diminishing of crimes of violence against that class. 5 million more arms are bought every year, and the rate of violent crime increases every year. Guns do not stop crime. Guns will not protect you or your home. In fact, guns will only expose those who live in your home to greater danger, greater physical danger. We live in a violent world. There's no recipe which guarantees you and me, to you and to me, safety. I cannot tell you that by not having a gun in your home, you will not be robbed or not menaced by a gun. I cannot tell you that criminals will not find their way for a long time to get their hands on guns. I can only tell you that that's the nature of American life, the world in which we must live and to which we must adjust. Obviously, many things are needed. A far more efficient police force. A far more efficient penal structure, far more stringent laws against crimes committed at gunpoint, far more effective ways of working with the youth who commit so many of the crimes of violence, far greater control over the display and the glorification of violence by the media. Restraint by parents, and creating in yet another generation the image that somehow guns are toys, and as natural and appropriate in a child's toy chest as in the father's dressing room drawer. Much needs to be done. I wish I could say to you that I believe that it will be done. I do not. Most of the attempts being made now to pass gun control legislation are not attempting to prohibit the ownership of guns. Too many legislators and too many big people like to hunt. Too many are caught up in the gun myths. And so we're being offered various palliatives, some form of gun registration, prohibition of concealed weapons. But none of it will work. All of it will fall short of effective results unless, once and for all, Americans are finally willing to give up these lethal toys, these bloody weapons, and admit what they are. Instruments of murder. Nothing more. How many more presidents, senators, presidential aspirants, Nobel Prize winners, senators, ordinary folk must be assassinated or killed before we as Americans finally wake up? Amen.